And he figured out a way to use artificial intelligence to keep his cat from bringing dead prey into the house through the cat door. This needs to be a product. This is the greatest invention of all time. Hey, everybody. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire managing editor Taylor Soper.
It's great to have you back in the studio, Taylor.
Good to be here again.
Yeah, you've been getting ramped up on your new job as managing editor, so you've been out there in the newsroom. You don't have time for this frivolity on the podcast.
That's true, but I am happy to be back.
All right. Well, hey, we've got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, including an AI innovation from Amazon that I need now at my house. We're going to talk about that later on. Plus, Steve Ballmer's possibly his best deal ever, would you say it is,
He's Taylor? Probably a pretty happy man.
Yeah, exactly. And a new Nintendo Switch. We're going to talk about that in the second segment. But first, we want to talk a little bit about some data analysis.
Some data and dollars.
That we've been doing at GeekWire. You know, we cover a lot of fundings day in and day out. We track what are known as the Form Ds in the Securities and Exchange Commission filings, which if you know what those are, you know how awesome they are. But they basically tell you who's raising money, and that's an indication of which startups are gaining momentum, hiring, sort of finding traction for their big ideas. So we cover these things all the time. And a few months back, at the suggestion of some folks from Pioneer Square Labs, T.A. McCann and Ben Gilbert, they suggested that we revive this practice of just simply tracking all of these things and adding them up over time and really getting a sense for how things are going in the Seattle startup ecosystem by seeing the overall aggregate deal flow. So we've been doing this for 3 months or so. We've gone back and gotten archival data as well, and we've found some interesting trends. So here we are at the first half of 2019. It's over. And so we have a sense for how things went in the second quarter and the first quarter. Taylor, you've been digging into this. How are things going?
Big numbers in Q2 in terms of Seattle startups and from the Pacific Northwest that have raised funding. We calculated that Pacific Northwest startups raised over $800 million in Q2. Now, that was almost double from Q1. So we saw this huge jump. Meanwhile, there was actually a 2% drop in total U.S. venture capital funding. So Seattle is kind of bucking the trend, which is super interesting.
But there were a couple of big deals, a few big deals in the second quarter from large Seattle tech companies, tech startups that really drove the trend. And as you said, there was a big contrast with the rest of the country.
Yeah. And so as you mentioned, there were a couple really, really big deals that actually minted unicorns, which are billion-dollar startups.
Do you mint a unicorn or do you birth a unicorn?
Whatever you want to do. Unicorns have been, they have arrived in Seattle in greater quantities. One of them is Outreach. They're a sales automation startup here in Seattle. They raised $114 million. And 1 month later, Auth0, they're an identity authentication service provider, they raised $103 million in one round. So these are massive rounds that are making these valuations of these startups skyrocket to above $1 billion. And there's not that many around Seattle. And all of a sudden, in the past 3 months, there have been two that have been birthed, minted, what have you.
That's right. So this is interesting to watch in part because you can then compare it to the national trends. But then, Taylor, you found from an Ernst & Young report, an EY report, a graphic that put all of this in context. It's called U.S. Venture Capital Investment by Region, Top 10 Markets. And Seattle is in the top 10. But as you look at this, and we'll link to it from the show notes, it looks like close to half of the overall investments are coming out of Silicon Valley, $13.7 billion. And Seattle's slice is tiny. If you look at that $800 million compared to the $13.7 billion, and even New York, this surprised me, $3.9 billion raised in the New York metro region, and even Boston is bigger. This has to be an anomaly because Seattle's number two, right? We're number two, baby.
It's going so great. There's so much money here. But yeah, you look at this graph, and it's like Seattle is equal to San Diego for total venture capital raise by quarter. So it's like,
this is just Q2. I mean, this is like judging a basketball team based on the 5 minutes at the end of the second half. I mean, really, or actually the second quarter. Maybe that'd be a better analogy. What's interesting, though, is if you look at the companies that are raising funds in Seattle, it really plays to this notion of the region's enterprise technology heritage. First, with outreach, they are serving businesses. The technology that they offer allows salespeople to become better at chasing leads. They essentially automate that process of identifying and following up with leads. Auth0, identity, authentication. So all sorts of interesting things. And one deal that closed after the second quarter ended was Remitly, which is this whole notion of monetary remittances internationally. So some real nitty-gritty technology here that's not your big flashy consumer internet plays. And in that way, frankly, is a lot more substantive and meaningful and potentially valuable long-term.
Yeah, and the next top three were also kind of this enterprise DNA that Seattle's always had. Highspot raised $60 million. That's a company that helps salespeople, you know, be more efficient with AI. Next was Zenoti, $50 million. They help spas with software for booking and scheduling. And there was also Flex, which raised $43 million. They do kind of like Airbnb for warehousing. So, you know, these really beefy, important enterprise businesses that play right into the enterprise DNA of Seattle.
So every time we report on a funding, what we do is we track it in our funding tracker. And you can see this live in real time, essentially, at geekwire.com/fundings. And you can also check out Taylor's report on GeekWire, which I'll link to from the show notes on this podcast. Big picture, it's been fascinating to see, number one, how closely our reporting has matched with some of these research firms like EY. Like, the numbers were essentially the same within a margin of error in terms of the total number of deals that they're tracking, we're tracking. But there was also a trend in these companies that we noticed and did some additional analysis on. Tell us about that, Taylor.
So in addition to our newly minted recent fundings list, we also have the GeekWire 200, which is our index of the top Pacific Northwest startups, 200 of them. And
that's been around for a while.
It's always been an awesome resource. If you want to check in to see who are the hottest startups in Seattle and the greater Pacific Northwest, you check the GeekWire 200.
And it changes every month. It's based on this calculation that takes into account employee count and social presence and inbound links to your website.
And we saw a tweet from Kirby Winfield. He's a local investor, longtime techie in Seattle. And he was talking about the idea that Microsoft, no one does startups after Microsoft. There's no startups founded by Microsoft. He's kind of this stereotype that's in Seattle. And he's like, you know what? That's not true. And he listed a handful of well-known CEOs of these big companies that have all worked at Microsoft. And so he actually gave us a call to action. He said, hey, GeekWire, can you actually do a little digging here? And that's what we did.
I bet people will be surprised out there when they hear this percentage that we're about to give. Because if you look at the GeekWire 200 companies, again, the top privately held tech startups in the Pacific Northwest, 25%, almost 25% of those companies are led by CEOs who have spent some time at Microsoft. That is remarkable. I mean, one company has that kind of pedigree in the startup world. And James Thorne on our team dug into this. It's fascinating because a lot of these folks contend that the culture at Microsoft back in the day, when there was lots of hard charging entrepreneurial activity inside the company trying to build these new businesses, things like Expedia with Rich Barton and many other new ventures inside the company, new businesses, new product lines, they say that led to the mentality that caused them to go out and become entrepreneurs when they left.
Yeah. And it just speaks to the fact of how important it is for a tech ecosystem in any city to have such a big anchor tenant like Microsoft. You know, it attracts talent, and talent comes here. They spend some time, do their work at a big company, and they get that itch.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, there's the famous quote from Amazon. Jeff Bezos liked to say that if people didn't really want to work hard, they could go to that country club over in Redmond. And clearly, at least in Microsoft's heyday, that was not the case. A couple interesting things that came out of James's reporting on this. Number one, Brian Mistily, the CEO of Inrix, who had worked at Microsoft for a number of years before he essentially was able to take a spin out of that company with some Microsoft technology to create Inrix. He contends that perhaps the current culture with Satya Nadella leading the company might not be as amenable to creating these types of people who are natural startup entrepreneurs. I thought that was interesting. And then in addition to that, Amazon itself is not anywhere near the kind of startup entrepreneur producer that Microsoft has been traditionally.
Not yet. They are a newer company. I think there were 11 companies on the GeekWire 200 with CEOs that had Amazon experience. So will we see a similar pattern where there's a ton of these Amazonians who go out and start their own companies, or will they, you know, their stock's doing pretty good at Amazon. Amazon's, you know, two pizza teams, these small teams, you're working on the coolest tech, making a lot of money. Why would you leave Amazon?
You sound like somebody talking about Windows 95 and the Microsoft team back in the day. I mean, seriously, that stuff changes. There's going to be a day, an era, trust me, when Amazon is no longer the cool startup.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a fascinating conversation because we talk about this in terms of the Silicon Valley giants that have set up huge offices here, Google, Facebook, Uber, Salesforce, and what that does and what impact that has on the startup ecosystem here. And one theory is that you're going to go to that job where you have security, maybe you have a family or not, you make more money, you still get to work on cool tech. Why would you go do a startup? And so one theory is that these big giant companies are sucking up all that would-be entrepreneurial talent. Now, following that, we've seen organizations like Pioneer Square Labs or Madrona Venture Labs that have this theory that, hey, there are these people in these big companies that we need to pluck out and we need to encourage them to start companies, and we're going to, you know, we need more investment dollars to get them come out. So it's just this really interesting thing that's going on in the ecosystem where are these big giant tech companies good for startup creation or bad?
Yeah. And it's fascinating to see, too, the gender balance because, as we were saying, perhaps Microsoft's culture back in the 90s and the early 2000s led to more of an entrepreneurial culture, but it was also heavily male. And you, in fact, see that in these nearly 50 startups that we're talking about, the 25% of the GeekWire 200 that are led by CEOs with Microsoft roots. There are only a few women among them. That, of course, is a massive flaw in this quest for diversity in gender and people of color in this entire ecosystem.
And that's right. And we saw a similar trend playing out when we analyzed the entire GeekWire 200 and the CEOs of each of those companies. And there were only 8% of that whole list were companies led by women. So there's a giant gap there in terms of gender diversity.
These numbers are fascinating to look at. You learn so much when you take the things that are flying by you every day and you just say, oh, let's collect these. Aggregate them, look at them over time, and we're going to be trying to do more and more of this with a lot of the reporting that we do. So you're just getting a glimpse of it here. If you want to check out the things that we're talking about, you can find the GeekWire 200 at geekwire.com/geekwire-200. You can also find the fundings list that we're updating regularly at geekwire.com/fundings. And you can, of course, check out all of our startup coverage at geekwire.com/startups. Okay, good stuff, Taylor. And we've got some more to talk about on the show, though, because I'm particularly excited about what's coming out from Nintendo.
I thought you were going to say cats and AI.
Well, that too. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to GeekWire.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
All right, welcome back to GeekWire. It's Todd Bishop with Taylor Soper. Taylor, the Nintendo Switch, how could it be more perfect than it already is?
Well, I don't know about more perfect, but it can get smaller and cheaper. That's the new Nintendo Switch Lite. Nintendo this week announced their newest device, and their Switch, the original OG, I guess I could call it OG now, has been, you know, one of the most successful already video game hardware in history. And Nintendo wants to broaden who they can target with this newer version. It's $100 cheaper. The one big difference is that this one does not connect to a TV like the original Switch does. So it's only handheld. basically kind of like the next gen Game Boy, if you will, which makes me kind of interested because I had Game Boy, I had Game Boy Pocket. I was all about the Game Boy. So this does interest me and it's cheaper. And I'm used to playing games on my phone. So I was always like, why would I ever buy another, you know, handheld console like the 3DS or whatever? But this does interest me and they look really cool.
So this is cool because I do have a Nintendo Switch at home. I paid the standard $300 back in the day for it. This is now dropping down to $200. So as you say, it'll be quite a bit cheaper. When's it coming out, by the way?
September 20th.
Okay. So just in time for the holidays, essentially, oh, yeah. Building up to the holidays. The thing is, I've walked downstairs to the basement when my daughter has a friend over, and I've noticed at times they have basically propped the Nintendo Switch gamepad up onto like a couch, and they're playing it there with the little controllers, not on the TV, even though the TV was available to them to use. So I think there will be some strong demand for this kind of thing. And as you say, they've got the Game Boy legacy. And as you were saying that, I wanted to ask you, what were the games that you played?
Ooh, there was this soccer game that I was obsessed with. It was like World Cup 97 or something. That was epic. You know, of course, the Pokemon games, like Blue, Rana, all those. Those were awesome, man. Yeah. And I actually had a Game Boy printer.
What?
Yeah. It was like the game or cartridge was it had a camera on it. And you would stick it in your Game Boy. And then I haven't thought about this in a while, but it was actually amazing where you would use your Game Boy and then take pictures with it with this game that was the actual camera. And then you could connect the Game Boy to the Game Boy printer, and you could print photos that you've taken with your Game Boy on these little tiny pieces of paper.
So you remember how old you were? I mean, like, what year was this?
This was probably late 90s.
Do you still have it?
It's probably at my parents' house somewhere, but next time I go home, I'm going to go try to find that and see if it works. It was pretty awesome. I have some old relics. Like, I was an owner of the first iPod with the actual wheel.
Yeah, yeah. So the one that only worked on the Mac.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so, which right. is weird because...
Did you not sync it to a computer or something?
That must have had me. I wasn't just playing Brick all day, although I did play that a lot.
Oh my gosh. That's right. They had the little mini games in there.
Yeah. Brick was epic.
Yeah. I mean, think about that in relationship to the phones today. And that is the remarkable thing about Nintendo is even though they've come out with some apps, games for smartphones, they are still very much focused on their own hardware, and you see that here. But the interesting thing here is with the Nintendo Switch Lite, it will also play Switch games. I mean, yeah. It'll play the games are basically interchangeable, even though this is going to be smaller.
Exactly, yeah. So that's probably a really smart move by Nintendo, where the games can work on all their devices. And like you said, just in time for the holidays, and if you didn't want to spend that $300, but you really wanted one, maybe that $200 will do you good. So we'll see what happens. Nintendo's already sold around 35 million of the original Switch since March 2017, so that's pretty remarkable.
That's great. All right, coming up next, it's the Random Channel. It's time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes this week at GeekWire. And Taylor, over the 4th of July holiday, I was saying to you, holy cow, I can't believe this actually happened. The Los Angeles Clippers, owned by Steve Ballmer, the former Microsoft CEO, who was our partner on the Numbers Geek podcast, full disclosure, they pulled off an epic deal. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, explain to people in the audience who don't follow basketball as religiously as you do why this matters so much.
So Kawhi Leonard is arguably the best player in the NBA, him, LeBron, maybe a couple others. He just won the NBA Finals MVP with the Toronto Raptors. He became a free agent when the season was over. So everyone was like, where is Kawhi going to go? Where is he going to sign? Toronto? Or is he going to team up with LeBron with the LA Lakers? And no one was really talking about the Clippers.
Except for us.
Except for us. And of course, Steve Ballmer was thinking about it, clearly. And so the news dropped on the 4th of July weekend, right after free agency opened up and the players could announce their decisions. And wow, Kawhi Leonard signs with the LA Clippers, and Ballmer and co and his execs with the Clippers, they pulled off it's got to be one of Ballmer's, as we said at the intro, one of his best deals, Microsoft career included, where Kawhi demanded to play with one of his buddies, Paul George, another big star. He was playing for another team, Oklahoma City. So basically, Ballmer and his buds had to trade for Paul George to get Paul George to come to the Clippers. That made Kawhi happy, and Kawhi was like, okay, I can come now. And so the Clippers now have two huge stars. They're arguably the favorite for the NBA Finals.
Say that again, because that is so crazy. No, don't say it again. But anyway, to say that they are the arguably the favorite for the NBA Finals to make it or win it, that is so insane. I spent quite a bit of time last season at Staples Center And I got to see, actually, I was really fortunate. I got to see the Clippers home opener, and then I got to see LeBron James's first game as a Laker at Staples Center, which was crazy, because you remember there was the fight?
Right.
Yeah. And it was like the same time, one of those games was the same time that the Dodgers were playing a key World Series game. I can't remember. It was like the night to be in LA, and I was staying right across from Staples Center. It was awesome. Anyway, I kind of got a little bit of the LA sports bug I was there.
And now, wow, LA is the NBA capital now with Lakers and LeBron, Clippers and Kawhi.
And not just LeBron on the Lakers, but
Anthony Davis and perhaps more stars. So it's just really interesting. And I think the Clippers were worried. We're sounding like a sports radio talk.
That's right. I'll bring it back home in a second.
Okay. But the Clippers were worried that Kawhi was going to go to the Lakers, and they didn't want to have their crosstown rival have LeBron and Kawhi. And basically, you know, that's a done deal. And so part of the reason they unloaded a bunch of draft picks and a lot of their assets to get Kawhi was to keep him from going to LeBron and co. So it's been fascinating. It's, you know, when Ballmer paid $2 billion in 2014 to buy the Clippers, it was like, oh, the Clippers, like, they're always kind of the afterthought. Lakers are, it's a lake show. Like, I don't know about this. Like, the Clippers have always been kind of like whatever. But now this move elevates them to the Lakers level and elevates them to the top of the NBA. So it's going to be cool. And as we know, if you followed Steve Ballmer over the years, you know how passionate he is about the things he gets involved with. Well, I'm sure that just amped up even more. So it's going to be fun to watch him on the sidelines cheering on Kawhi and Paul George and co.
Steve Ballmer had some real stinkers of deals at Microsoft. I mean, oh my God. Nokia, Aquantiv. You could argue that Skype was not really that successful.
Yeah. Missing mobile, basically.
Yeah, missing mobile. I mean, to me, he really struggled. He would point to the overall value return to shareholders over his tenure. You could argue against that in a variety of ways. But really, if you look at his career and the way that he would present himself at Microsoft meetings, I would always look at him and go, why doesn't that guy own a sports team?
Yeah.
And here he is. He found his place as the owner of this team, and he pulled off what at least right now looks like it has the potential to be a highly successful deal, in contrast with some of the bombs that he put together at Microsoft. All right. So that's one that we've been buzzing about. And you're right. We should not sound like a sports radio talk show here. So let's talk about my favorite invention from an Amazon employee. This is Ben Ham. He is a product manager at Amazon, and he figured out a way to use artificial intelligence to keep his cat from bringing dead prey, rats, birds, what have you, into the house through the cat door. This is the greatest invention of all time. Have you ever had to pick a dead bird off of your living room floor, off the stairs, off the kitchen floor, Taylor?
I have not, but it sounds like you have.
I have.
And it sounds horrible.
Our cat snuggles.
That's cute.
Snuggles, yeah.
This part's not so cute.
No, this part is not so snuggly. She has been taught by our neighbor's cat, Keanu, to kill birds and bring them in the house as a trophy. And it is horrible. Two of them have been alive when she's brought them in. One of them was not. Thankfully, she has not picked up Keanu's other habit, which is bringing rabbits, dead rabbits, into our neighbor's house.
Ooh, these are some vicious cats.
So what this Amazon employee did, and this is an Amazon product manager, he's not an AI engineer, he figured out a way to use machine learning, computer vision, and cameras to detect when the cat is approaching the cat door and to see whether the cat has prey in its mouth and to lock the cat door if the cat has prey.
That's brilliant.
This needs to be a product. This needs to be a product.
Bezos, come on, get on this.
Oh my God. So brilliant. And the Amazon folks are actually, it's even though it's not an Amazon product, it's really a testament to the ability of pretty much anyone with some technical aptitude, not necessarily an engineer, to use AI and to use some of the tools that are available from Amazon and others to create useful products. And it's, gosh, this is, I never would have thought this would be a problem that I would be grateful someone is solving.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would gladly be a beta tester for this.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, I gotta say. And if it keeps dead rabbits and birds out of your house, that's something you'd probably pay for.
Oh, I would pay, and I would pay a monthly subscription for this.
Wow.
Yes.
That's the next level.
Yeah. I mean, we basically shut her out now.
Snuggles?
Yeah, we shut Snuggles out if she goes outside. Oh, she can sort of scratch at the door and let us, but like, sorry, no, no, you can't come in, Snuggles. All right. I'm hoping that Snuggles becomes a character on the podcast, much like John Cook's car was for many years.
Yeah. As long as this dead bird, dead rabbit thing stops eventually.
Hey, it's the animal kingdom. It's probably not going to stop.
Unless AI can help. So.
Okay. Hey, that was fun. Good random channel. Interesting stuff to talk about. We will link to everything that we talked about from the show notes on geekwire.com. Thank you for listening to GeekWire, and be sure to subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app. You may notice that we have some new theme music this week. We hope you like it. A big thanks to Daniel L.K. Caldwell, who composed and performed our new theme song. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Taylor Soper.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.